Spanish Republicans in the Second World War, Republic Across the Mountains is the new book by Jonathan Woodhead. It tells the story of the 500,000 Spanish Republicans that fled across the Pyrenees in 39 as Catalonia fell to Franco's forces. What happened next is by turns fascinating, tragic, and reveals perhaps a hidden history of Spanish involvement in the Second World War, including the role of Gibraltar, including the División Azul as well, and also the Maquis. Delighted to be joining me live on the line, author of Spanish Republicans in the Second World War, Jonathan Whitehead. Jonathan, good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Good to have you with us. It's a period of history, I suppose, that a lot of people just think, well, if you do a casual glance at Spanish history, you think, well, the war finished, the Civil War finished, and that was pretty much it. But of course, there were a lot of people who had fought, and it was a bitter conflict. A lot of people who just couldn't remain in Spain for fear of their lives.
Yeah, no, it was. It was one of those. What happened in January, February 1939 was one of the great humanitarian crises of the 20th century. 500,000 refugees forced across the border as Franco's armies arrived in Catalonia, occupied Barcelona, and they were pushed out across the Pyrenees at the height of winter, freezing temperatures, and welcomed in France by people who didn't want them, forced into improvised concentration camps on the beach where there were no facilities, no sanitary conditions, no water, no food, nothing. It was just an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen quite a few propaganda images at the time from Franco, from Spain, and they were saying, look, you're going to have communists, anarchists, all sorts coming over the mountain. And so it wasn't as if they were welcomed with open arms. So why did sort of Spanish citizens decide, right, well, you know, we're going to get ourselves organized, or we're going to help in the fight against fascism? Was it because they'd been through such an experience and they wanted to stop it wherever it was?
That is a very, very complex question. I think there were all sorts of different motives. I think one of the things that we have to say at the beginning is that a large percentage of those people who did cross the Pyrenees turned around and came back to Spain quite quickly. So they were just fleeing from the Francoist army. But once they realized the conditions in France were bad, they decided that they were probably better off to take a risk and to come back to Spain. There were people in France who had been forced across the border who were not necessarily even Republican supporters, but had just been in those areas that were occupied by the Republic in the Civil War, and therefore were forced across the border by the Francoist army. Those who stayed, the Republicans, and essentially those in the Socialist Party, and even more the Communist Party, were of course the first resistance. For them, it was almost a seamless continuation of the Civil War. In fact, they refused to call it the Spanish Civil War. They called it the Spanish War, because they considered it an international struggle against fascism. And therefore, the struggle in France when the Germans attacked was just a continuation of that struggle.
I mean, that was my next question. I mean, you could sympathize with Spaniards who had fled, you know, one war, walking straight in, basically, to a second war. They must have thought, you know, dear mio, here we go again.
They did. But of course, on the other hand, there were a large number of the French government issued a report at the beginning of 1939 saying that of the nearly 500,000 refugees that had crossed into France, over 200,000 were troops. They'd been disarmed when they crossed the border, but they were trained and battle-hardened troops. And therefore, it didn't take the French very long to work out that they could be quite useful. And in fact, probably we'll get onto this later, but in the history of the French resistance, it was the Spanish Maquis who really inspired the French resistance at the beginning. They were the ones who were ready to fight from the beginning. The French were a little bit more reluctant. They weren't sure what was happening. They weren't sure about Vichy, but the Spanish were
there and ready, basically.
Yeah.
So 200,000 battle-hardened, people who've just fought in a bloody conflict. Didn't the Vichy government think, well, this is, or the French government think, this is a bit worrying to perhaps arm these men, or did they just think, well, we're better than have them with us than against us, kind of thing?
You're absolutely right about Vichy. I was thinking the period before Vichy. Before.
Sorry, excuse me. I'm leaping on with my history, going left, right, and centre. So let's do the reaction then. Immediately, the French, when the Germans launch Blitzkrieg and they go through the Low Countries and they're in Paris in a matter of weeks. But what is the original thing then of the first French government?
In the winter, the early months of 39, not sure what to do with these refugees. They encouraged as many as possible to return to Spain. You know, to be fair to the French, I mean, this was a massive problem. They weren't prepared to deal with that number of people. They weren't particularly anxious or willing to do anything. But on the other hand, I mean, it was a huge crisis. So their first reaction was to persuade as many of the Republicans as possible to come back to Spain. And probably that was about 150,000 did come back to Spain. And then what to do with the others? Because they were in concentration camps, something had to be done with them. So they offered the following options. They offered service in the Foreign Legion, and about 3,000 of the refugees, perhaps I shouldn't say Republicans, let's call them Republicans.
Yeah.
3,000 joined the Foreign Legion. Then they created three marching regiments, this very sort of special French idea of improvising regiments in times of crisis. They improvised three for foreigners, and another 3,000 Spanish Republicans joined those and actually fought against the Germans and the German invasion. And then as many as 55,000 joined what were called these companies of foreign volunteer workers that were used, and most of them, in fact, went to the Maginot Line to work on the maintenance of the Maginot Line.
Okay.
So then, before Vichy, there was a huge involvement of these Republicans in the defense of France. But of course, then the Wehrmacht arrived, and that was all swept away.
So, I mean, I'm just going to take a diversion on this one, if I may. You know, because a lot of Republicans ended up in we talk about one, you know, these camps on the beaches, in southern, southwest France, southeast France. But a lot of them ended up in the most notorious camps that we've ever seen. Mauthausen, for example, which was the big concentration camp where a lot of Spanish ended up. Was that during this first period then, or was it when Vichy came over?
No, that was after the defeat of France, when the Germans had occupied the northern half of France and Vichy had been established in, let's say, the southern half. And they did not know what to do with a lot of the Spanish who had been captured, who were prisoners of war, who'd been fighting them. And so it was decided to deport 7,500 to Mauthausen. So,
yeah.
But that was the Germans.
Now, if there's one thing that the Spanish have been consistently good at in the history of warfare, going back to the Spanish, what we call the Peninsular War, or you can call it the Spanish War of Independence, it's guerrilla warfare. You know, we've got the banner, there's a proud history of people fighting in the hills and uprisings and hit and run. And, you know, we think of guerrilla warfare as something that was, you know, developed by Wingate's Chindits up in the things of Burma. Not the case. And the And if you've seen Pan's Labyrinth, you'll know about the Mackie, because that's a very strange, wonderful film, links the fantastical with the historical. But the Mackie, if you like, you can argue taught the French about the resistance.
Yeah, no. Of course, the word guerrilla comes from the Spanish. It's a Spanish word. So, as you say, the guerrillas were the Mackie. Were originally, at the outset, it was inspired by the Spanish, who I said before, were, for them it was just the continuation of this struggle. And they inspired the resistance. Yeah. And then, of course, the history of the French resistance is so complex.
Yeah.
And there are so many different groups within it and so on. But the Spanish did form their own group within the French resistance. They called it the AGE, the group of Spanish guerrillas. And they fought, quite often, they fought as a group rather than as a part of the whole French resistance. And they were, as you say, very good indeed.
We'll come back to them, because I want to try and keep things, because it's such a scope you're doing here. Because in the meantime, of course, we've got Mussolini in Italy, you've got Hitler in the greater Germany, and you've got Franco in Spain, which is a fascist state.
Yeah.
I know it's been through, you know, a devastating conflict, but there were still quite a few bits and pieces that Franco could have done. And so it's, you look at also, you look at certain things done by the secret services, and also the still interesting, and I use that word advisedly, issue of Gibraltar, because it would have been, although the rock is one of the greatest natural forces on fortresses on the planet, you know, Franco must have been looking across at that and thinking, right, I'm going to have a pignon before the week's out.
Yeah, no, you're right. Gibraltar is we tend to forget how important Gibraltar was. I mean, we think of Gibraltar today, and it's almost, we think of it as a tourist resort more than anything. You know, okay, the Navy uses it, but British power having, you know, it's not the same as it was in the past, so it's lost its importance. In the Second World War, it was absolutely crucial. Goering at Nuremberg, while he was on trial at Nuremberg, actually said that the greatest mistake Adolf Hitler made in the Second World War was not to take Gibraltar.
Because it was the gates of the Mediterranean and you couldn't get in or out, and it's so shallow. I mean, the studio here is about literally 30 kilometres, less than 30 kilometres away from Gibraltar, so you can see it on a clear day, and it's so shallow between there and Africa.
Yeah, and Goering said, you know, before attacking Russia, Hitler really should have ensured the defeat of Britain. And the key to defeating Britain, as far as Goering was concerned, was taking Gibraltar. As you say, that would have closed the Mediterranean. It would have closed the route to the Suez Canal, Malta. It would have. I'm terrified of getting involved in counterfactual history because I find it very silly, exciting in fiction, but you can get a bit carried away. I mean, obviously, we don't know what would have happened, but we do know that Gibraltar had a crucial role to play. And so it was extremely important for the British to keep it.
And it was extremely important as well for the diplomatic services to keep the Iberian Peninsula, Portugal as well, out of the war. So that, you know, I mean, you can argue that Franco couldn't have committed more men, and, you know, Spain was a port, was an agricultural society, basically, with little pockets of industrialization, and, you know, up until this point, and it couldn't have afforded to go to war either.
No, my theory is that when Hitler and Franco met at that famous summit meeting in Daia, at the end of 1940, to discuss whether or not Spain would enter the war, and the meeting came to nothing. They couldn't agree. But I have a feeling that Hitler was less interested in Spain declaring war and sending an army that was in no condition to fight. They'd just come out of the Civil War. They didn't have weapons. I don't think he was particularly interested in that. He was already carrying Mussolini, and Mussolini was a liability. Mussolini was causing him problems in Greece, occupying countries that Hitler didn't want to occupy, etc., etc.
Yeah.
He was carrying Franco, but what he did want was to get to Gibraltar. And he didn't. There were two options. I mean, either he could negotiate with Franco, and that Franco would allow the Wehrmacht into Spain, and there's sort of a joint operation to take Gibraltar, or when Franco refused that, then he actually did lay plans to invade Spain, a hostile invasion down the east coast to take Gibraltar. It was crucial.
We could go, that could take us the most of the day, I think, Jonathan, if we go to the counter history on that one. We talk about Goering saying about he shouldn't have invaded Russia, and he should have looked at Gibraltar. And we talk about, you know, Hitler not wanting the Spanish army because they were depleting the whole thing. But there was Spanish fighting on the Wehrmacht side, the Division Azul. Now, Spain had been a testing ground for the Condor Legion, the German Air Force, the first civilian bombing, of course, Gernika. And it was perhaps just repaying the favour, but the Division Azul, an army regiment made up of Spaniards, you would think they would have been sent somewhere where they were used to the climate, but no, they were sent to what must have been absolute purgatory for them.
Yeah, the history of the Division Azul is an extraordinary. I mean, obviously, on ideological grounds, I find it very difficult in any way to defend the Division Azul, but they were very brave men, and they fought very hard, and they received a lot of compliments from Hitler and from the people who fought around them. They were very brave men.
And they were in Russia, weren't they? I mean, he sent them to Russia, for the Eastern Front.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been, I mean, for them, it must have been a different planet, basically.
But in historical terms, that in itself is interesting, because Hitler was extremely angry with Franco. Hitler, with Mussolini, had helped Franco win the Civil War, and he expected some gratitude. And the gratitude was to take the form of Franco declaring war on Great Britain. And Franco knew that he wasn't in a position to declare war on Great Britain, so he said no, and he wouldn't let Hitler in to take Gibraltar. But he had to do something, he had to make some gesture. And he was saved in that sense with Operation Barbarossa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When Hitler turned and invaded the Soviet Union, because Franco then came up with this wonderful idea that he could declare that there were two wars, and that he was going to support Hitler in the Eastern War, on the Eastern Front, against the communists.
Of course.
Terrible communists who'd been fighting against him in the Civil War and so on. So this was his great way out, to show his gratitude to Hitler. So they asked for volunteers to form what was the Spanish Division of Volunteers to go and fight in the Soviet Union. And there was a massive response. There were huge numbers of people volunteering to join this force. And this division became known as the Blue Division because of the uniforms that they were wearing. But they had to go to Russia. They had to go to the Soviet Union because Franco didn't want them involved in a war on the Western Front against the British and later with the Americans. This was his idea. That so long as he was only fighting the Soviet Union, then he could keep contact relations with the British.
It's an interesting point about this, is that the fact that those who were captured, and I'll just be quick on this, those who were captured by the Soviets, those lucky ones, if you like, who were captured by the Soviet ones, I suppose, they, after their time in Soviet camps, they were returned, and the place they were sent to, if you like, be debriefed, was the Auberge in Marbella, which is still standing as a tourist accommodation. I think it was 1955 they got back.
Yeah, but I didn't know that about Marbella. Yes, it was very late. It was the mid-50s before they got back. But I didn't realise they were taken to Marbella.
Yeah, they were. Not in the modern Marbella, because obviously that would be a different planet. But let's move on swiftly. But no, they were put there to decommission, to debrief.
Could I just say about the division?
Sure.
I have to say, I mean, ideologically, I find it very difficult to defend them. But they fought absolutely heroically in two battles on the Lake Ilmen and then at Krasny Bor. They were incredibly brave, almost reckless. I'm not going to go into that.
Yeah.
Incredibly reckless. They were just so brave. But the problem that I have with all this is that basically they were involved in the Siege of Leningrad. And the Siege of Leningrad, they helped the German army in the Siege of Leningrad, which was the 900-day siege of Leningrad. And the people in that town, which is now, of course, St. Petersburg, and the population suffered so much because of the climatic conditions that you were saying, the cold, the hunger, and so on. And that's what the Blue Division did in Russia. So on the one hand, I have to defend their bravery and their heroicism, but on the other hand...
Yeah, you and me both. Let's move away from that thing. Let's go to Operación Reconquista, because this is fascinating. Because you have basically, we mentioned them before, the Maquis, you know, brilliant, brilliant guerrilla warfare going across the border into the valley of the Aran. Tell me a little bit about it, because we've only got 10 minutes left and I can talk to you for the rest of the day on this, but just tell me a little bit about this operation, because the Maquis kept going, didn't they, until the 60s, basically.
Yeah, I was reading yesterday Paul Preston's book, who said that at the end of the 40s, there were still 7,000 Maquis actively fighting in Spain.
Yeah.
But the Val d'Aran, the Spanish Republicans had played such an important role in the French resistance. They'd fought in the British Army. There were several groups of Spaniards who had fought in the SAS and so on. They fought in the French army with General Leclerc in North Africa. They were the first into Paris in the liberation of Paris.
Of course.
They had been really, really involved in it. And they simply assumed that when Hitler and Mussolini were defeated, the Allies would then liberate Spain.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
So there's the big but. Again, I said at the beginning, I don't want to get involved in counterfactual history because that's just, but, you know, you've got to ask, why? But at this point, in the autumn of 44, they were still expecting the Allies to help them. They'd help the Allies. They expected the Allies would help them to liberate Spain. But they thought that the Allies needed a nudge, and the best nudge would be to occupy an area of Spain, to create a bridgehead in Spain, raise the Republican flag. They assumed that the Franco's army would then respond, and they would create a situation where the Allies were actually forced to intervene, because they had a bridgehead, and there was Franco turning again on the French border against his people. So that was the great plan. And there were 10,000 Maquis in that area of France, on the north of the Pyrenees, who had been active in the French resistance, and they were all ready. They were, we've said before, excellent fighters, now very hardened, battle-trained, ready for it, really up for it. And that was the moment. So in October, they launched, essentially, of course, this was a communist operation. It has to be said.
Yeah.
It was the communists who dominated those groups of resistance, Maquis. They had created something called the Spanish National Union, UNAE, which was supposed to involve every anti-Franquista, but of course it didn't, because there were so many people who were not prepared to join with the communists.
Yeah,
but that was it. So they launched this invasion across the Pyrenees into the Val d'Aran.
Who was the? By the way, who was there a leader, or was it very much, if you like, your life of Brian, the DJ's People's Natural Front against the People's Natural? Because that's when I'm talk about Barcelona during the Civil War, it sometimes seems like that. So therefore, was there a recognized, if you like, leader for this? Yeah, and you was a communist, but it was basically anti-fascist. I mean, the two great ideologies here, you know, are clashing throughout Europe. So it's not, you know, just people who can sing, you know, No Pasarán and all that. It's the ideal rather than the having any book by Marx on you at all times.
Sure, there was a civilian leader whose name was Jesús Monzón, who had taken control of this, because in 39. The leaders of the Communist Party in Spain bravely ran away to the Soviet Union. I say that with great bitterness.
Of course. Brave Sir Robin, yes.
Because the rank and file of the Communist Party, whatever we think about communism, whatever we think about the Communist Party, the rank and file who had fought were the bravest of the brave and the most disciplined of all. And they were abandoned in the south of France. Their leaders took off. La Pasionaria, all of these people took off and went to the Soviet Union. So they were left. And they started improvising. And the leader that emerged in this was a man called Jesús Monzón. Actually, incidentally, when the Communist Party leadership left, they left a woman whose name was Carmen de Pedro in control of the Communist Party in France. Okay? And her only claim for this responsibility was the fact that she had once been personal assistant to Togliatti, who was head of the Comintern. Sorry, this is getting very complicated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so, in all of this, this leader emerged called Jesús Monzón, who was a bit of a lad. He liked his drink, and he liked good food, and he liked all sorts of things, which in those days communists were not really supposed to. He was a bit bourgeois, but he was a brilliant leader, and he was very charismatic, and he really reconstructed the Communist Party. In France, in the south of France, okay. So he was the civilian leader of this movement. He then left and came back to Madrid. So he was actually based in Madrid because he was trying to reconstruct the Communist Party in Spain. But he was the inspiration of the National Union and of this move. Then the military leaders. The most important was a man called López Tovar, who was actually put in command of this operation. And he, in fact, he was a bit hesitant. He wasn't absolutely convinced that this was the right thing to do, because there were other people in this movement who believed that the best thing to do would be to infiltrate all of these guerrillas into all parts of Spain. Mm. And wherever they were, for example, in Andalusia, particularly in Andalusia, and where they would go up to the Monte and they would create new forces, anti-Franco, rather than have this one single massive raid against the Val d'Aran.
Yeah.
So, October 1944, they do invade. the first force of 4,000 guerrillas across the border, take the village of Borsos, in the Val d'Aran, make it their headquarters, and then spread out.
And the rest, as they say, can be found in the book. Jonathan, I could talk to you about this for the rest of the day, but we're going to run out of time, alas. I mean, just quickly, because we've got 3.5 minutes, where did you get the information from and what gave you the inspiration to do it? Because it's a fascinating subject, as you can probably tell from the way I've been talking to you.
Yeah, I had written a book. I wrote a book about Franco. Not about Franco, about the fate of the Republicans in Spain under the dictatorship. And as I was working on that, I discovered, of course, that a lot of the story, the big story, is those Republicans had actually left Spain. So then I became involved in studying them. The archives in London have a lot of information about Gibraltar. The Communist Party archives in Madrid are fascinating. You could spend days and days.
I can imagine.
All of these, it's not just the documents, the things are there. You know, you can touch the things that people left behind, their identity cards. It's all there, so it's absolutely fascinating. And the more I researched it, the more excited I got, as you can tell by my voice. It became sort of, it was an absolute passion. These people were very brave. Maybe some of them were misguided. I'm not going to argue that one way or the other. They were so brave, and they fought very hard, and they were let down. They deserve more support from the Allies. The Allies should have done more to help them, but of course, that's another story.
The book is called Spanish Republicans, the Second World War, Republic Across the Mountain. It's by Jonathan Whitehead. Jonathan, if people want to get more information about you or this brilliant book, is there a social media presence? Is there a website? Where can they find you?
The publisher, of course, has a website, which is Pen and Sword. And I have to confess, I'm not very good at social media. I am now being forced to get involved in social media, but as yet I don't think, no, in the coming day, because the book hasn't been published yet, the book is published at the end of the month.
Yeah.
But in time, yes, I will. I am on Facebook, if anybody
wants. Right, find you there as well. And it's available as a virtual download from our TRA virtual bookstore as well. This book is called Spanish Republicans in the Second World War, Republic Across the Mountains, by Jonathan Whitehead. And by the way, Jonathan, one of the great things about having video meetings is you can see me, I can see you, and any man who has an electric guitar and a Howe Stark thing behind them is got to be, and is a historian, is a friend of mine. So there you go.
Well, that's very kind of you. Thank you very much.
The book is called Spanish Republicans in the Second World War, Republic Across the Mountain. Jonathan, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today.
Been a ball talking to you. Thanks very much.